The work of this church in the world is realized through the generous financial support of all who call this place home. Along with the gifts and time and talent, ours is a shared ministry. You have a role to play here. Church membership is open to all. For more information, go to uusf.org.
As I mentioned in my opening words, the past five Wednesdays, I have met with 10 to 12 participants to discuss the essays in the book, Love at the Center. It was an honor and a privilege to hear the story shared and the questions raised. It was a truly highlight of my week, and I always left with a new insight or with the wonder and awe of those present. My hope, when I started the class, that it would culminate in reflections that could be shared in worship. And today is the realization of that hope. You will hear from five different participants about what they believe or what they learned about love. I want to mention as well, all five are new to our UUSF community within the last year, some even within the past few months. I am grateful they agreed to share. Without further ado, I invite you to sit back and enjoy their reflections.
Good morning. I'm Rick Punganeben. I am a practicing Quaker for the past 20 years. But I've had the pleasure of worshiping with you all for about the last 7 months. It's just been so wonderful. And I was honored to ask to share this with you. I started coming to Reverend Laura's discussion series on Love at the Center at a particularly raw period of my life. I'm a media literacy educator, and I've had the privilege of working for 6.5 years for KQED, your local PBS and NPR station. For me, it's a dream job, supporting the mission to inspire, inform, and engage my local community with the information they need to thrive. And yes, my colleagues are Big Bird and Jack Pepin. But like a humane immigration policy, like a good education, like the National Park Service, this administration has targeted public media as another societal good it needs to destroy. Exactly. So in July, Congress voted to defund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the entity that provides federal grants that fund all public media stations around the country, including KQED. As a result, KQED was forced to eliminate my position along with about 50 other of my colleagues. So this Friday was my last day of work. But I was asked to share with you by Reverend Laura what I've learned about love from our discussion series. I've learned that Unitarian Universalists have an important message when it comes to love. That isn't just a fleeting emotion, it's a force that protects, heals, and transforms. The Reverend Abhi Janamanchi wrote that love is a manifestation of the divine, that God is not a distant being orchestrating events from afar, but is present in every act of love, compassion, and kindness. Reverend Susan Frederick Gray reminds us that what draws us together isn't a shared belief, but a desire for community. And not just any community, but a caring community that enriches our lives, holds us in times of need, and helps us make a difference in the world. And I've seen that kind of love in action in my life over these past weeks. So many people I barely know have reached out to ask how they can help. People have bought me meals, they've written me recommendations, they've opened up their personal social networks to me. A bunch of us laid off KQED employees have banded together to share support and to bitch together. My colleagues threw me an office dance party on Wednesday where we cried as we rocked out to disco and K-pop tunes. So honestly, I feel buoyed by love and kindness, like 100 balloons lifting me up, like that scene in Up. So that's what I learned about love in this past month, that love is more powerful than the bitter dreams of tiny despots. Oh, and support your public media station.
Our next reflection is from a young adult, Nico, who was unable to be here today but asked me to share it. It starts with a quote by Rachel Held Evans from Searching for Sunday. Imagine if every church became a place where everyone is safe, but no one is comfortable. Imagine if every church became a place where we told one another the truth. We just might create sanctuary. And this is Nico's reflection. Back in December, I started attending the UU Church in San Francisco. After the twin disasters of COVID and politics, I had resolved to be someone deeply connected. And importantly, as someone who could exist solely in virtual spaces, I made a decision to be with people in the real world. One weirdness about my time here has been how little I actually know about Unitarian Universalism and the theology behind it. In June, I officially joined the congregation as a member, despite not having read a single word written by a UU theologian, at least not beyond the hymnal. I think this was a good thing. I did not need to know why we replaced our principles with values to understand that love is at the center. I did not need to know the history behind love in action or love is God to volunteer at the local shelter or share silence every Sunday. And there is nothing theology can teach me about the deep connection that I can't learn from singing in the choir. I will say that after reading through Love at the Center as part of Reverend Laura's theology class, I learned a lot about love. Not so much from the specific contents of the book, rather, I learned from the discourse with and between my classmates. On the first day of class, we wrote a covenant to define what we collectively wanted our class to be. We wanted our class to be open to the thinking of others, to treat others with respect, to listen to the person with the mic, to pass the mic to others, and make sure everyone had a chance to speak, to have the option to skip the mic, and so on. Next, we started getting into the chapters. Each week, we reflected on what we resonated with, what challenged us, and what we learned from UU from the readings. Being a child of the Redwoods, I instantly resonated with eco-theology. I also learned that love within UU is wide and diverse. There was the love of taking care of a mother with Alzheimer's, the love between bear cubs playing in the backyard, the love of gravediggers laying the body to rest. But it was in the challenges of the text that I really saw love firsthand. There were two parts to this. First, there was the attentive listening to where people struggled with the text. The second part was the gathering the courage to express what about the text affected you. It was a bit like Chiaroscuro, the artistic technique of using strong contrast between light and shadow to create a sense of volume, depth, and three-dimensionality in two-dimensional works. In the contrast and relief of people's struggles with the text, we came to see our own silhouettes. The most miraculous of all this is how it all held with love. We held people's beliefs and unbeliefs in God. We held people's beliefs and unbeliefs in capitalism. We held the dual loves of Unitarianism, of love as our power in the world, and of Universalism, of love as cosmic power. We held past struggles and future hopes. All good art tries to say something, so I'm going to put my pitch right here. Take a class. I don't necessarily mean a UU class, although I imagine whatever Reverend Laura cooks up next will be a good place to start. What I really mean, though, is to be in conversation about something that allows for you to be seen in your challenges and bear witness to the challenge of others.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ann Diaz, and I, along with my husband, Eric, and our daughter, Roma, started attending UUSF in April of this year. I was raised Catholic, which I'm finding is a fairly common origin story amongst this congregation. I remember thinking as a child that everyone in the world was Catholic, because most people I knew went to the same church my family did. And while the patterns of Mass could be comforting, I found myself with a lot of questions that couldn't be answered to my satisfaction. Why couldn't women be priests? Why was there so much talk about shame and sin? Why was so much of the church experience about memorization and recitation instead of questions and conversation? Decades later, I have found myself at UUSF, and over the last few weeks, I've spent my Wednesday evenings discussing love with an interesting and thoughtful group of people led by Reverend Laura. Our conversations have been energizing, and these discussions, along with the readings from the book Love at the Center, have helped to shape my current understanding of love. I'll admit that I embarked on this class feeling like I had a pretty good handle on what love is. I'm fortunate to have a supportive husband who I admire and have fun with, and I'm a parent to a remarkable daughter who delights me on a daily basis. I have friends whose unique contributions to my life I treasure, and broader family who make time for one another. So I know what love is, right? But many of the essays in the book forced me to reflect more, as they focused on love as an action, not just a feeling. They challenged the idea of love as something comfortable, easy, well-worn, and instead framed love as, in the words of bell hooks, a practice that offers no place of safety. We risk loss, hurt, and pain. We risk being acted upon by forces outside our control. In other words, when we love, we become vulnerable. Love is work, and it doesn't require reciprocation. Contrary to the old adage, love is not fair, but, and this took some time for me to grapple with, everyone deserves it. That doesn't mean we're required to offer blanket forgiveness or turn the other cheek, no matter how horrible the action. These words from an essay by Dan McCannon really stuck with me. Quote, some early universalists believed that a loving God would send everyone straight to heaven, regardless of how we behaved here on earth. To me, that's not love. I don't want a God who loves me but doesn't care what I do. I want a God who loves me enough to help me become more loving. I think you can replace the word God here with human being or community, and the message rings just as true. Love is the challenge to recognize everyone's humanity, and in doing so, hold one another accountable to becoming the best versions of ourselves. Debate is love. Protest is love. Speaking up when we see injustice is love. Have you heard of the Bader-Minhoff phenomenon? It's this concept that once you start focusing on something, it just pops up everywhere. Earlier this week, on the way to summer day camp, my daughter posed this question to my husband. Is love forever? Before this class, I think my own quick answer would have been, of course. But now, I think it can be, but you have to work at it. This week, I also had jury duty for the first time, and would you believe it, the juror orientation video had this quote. Ideals are made real only as long as individual citizens are willing to uphold them. Love is made real only when we are brave enough to risk our own comfort to act on it. Thank you.
Our next participant wanted to remain anonymous and asked me to read their essay. For as long as I can remember, I've been drawn towards something deeper, a presence, a reality, a love that felt bigger than myself. As a child, I often caught glimpses of it in church pews while singing hymns I didn't fully understand. There was a warmth there that encouraged intimacy and vulnerability, something that made me feel like part of something vast. Later, I found traces of it in the pages of books, in conversations that cracked something open, and in moments of stillness out in nature. And certainly in the vivid, unguarded landscapes opened by psychedelics. Those experiences were unpredictable, humbling, sometimes overwhelming, but always filled with the sense that I had stepped into the very heart of reality. They left me with a truth I couldn't shake. There is more to this life than what we see. In time, I realized it was the same truth I had tasted in my Christian roots. It was the same truth whispered in poetry, spiritual literature, and in sacred texts from traditions I had barely begun to understand. That truth was, and still is, oneness. Oneness feels like love because it is love. It's the fading of boundaries between self and other, between self and earth, between self and the divine. It is the woven fabric that holds the stars together and still call us each by our own name. There are inlets into it everywhere. We find it in the way children move and express without restraint. It's in the raw honesty of suffering, in the quiet of sharing a meal, in the way music can make you feel more yourself and more connected all at once. These moments do more than make life bearable. They reveal what life actually is. We are born for love. You can see it in any infant, how they unashamedly reach out under the assumption that someone will be there to meet their gaze and hold them close. Over time, we learn that the more separated we are, the more mature we have become. And while separation has its place, we still will always be drawn back to this love. My journey has been one of unlearning, letting my guard down enough to notice that this love, this oneness, is not fragile. It does not depend on my worthiness or my effort. It is already here, in the laughter of friends, in the ache of longing, in the ordinary kindness of a stranger holding the door when your hands are full. The more I soften into it, the more I realize that the desire that first pushed me out into the world through religion, literature, altered states, and through countless moments of searching was not a searching for something new. It was and is a return to the love that has always been here, the love that is, quite simply, the center of everything.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Chelsea Thomas. I've been attending since January, and I want to thank Laura very much for holding this discussion and for giving me this chance to speak. Anyone who's ever spoken to me for more than 30 seconds has definitely already heard my spiel. For 17 years, I was my mom's caretaker. This is almost the knee-jerk way that I identify myself, even now, a year and a half after her passing. My mom and I had a complicated relationship, to put it mildly. She was an incredibly clever, funny, stubborn, and often demanding woman. The world had not been kind to her, but she was especially unkind to herself. As difficult as this still is for me to accept, she was not always the safe parental figure that I needed and deserved when I was growing up. She hadn't been given the tools to take care of herself, let alone to raise another human as a single parent. Unfortunately, I frequently bore the brunt of her poor emotional dysregulation. Still, for all of her shortcomings, for all of the knockdown, drag-out fights we had probably too many of, I find myself defending her to people who didn't even know her. It's so important to me that people see her not just for the things she may have gotten wrong, but for the things that she tried so hard to get right. I want them to know how she quit drinking cold turkey when I was 3, because as she would later tell me, she did not want me being raised by an alcoholic the way she had been. I want them to know about the time that she scrimped and saved for months to take 7-year-old me to Disneyland. I need them to know that she was the only person in my life who never made me feel judged. If there's one thing I can say about my mom, it's that I never once doubted how much she loved me. I loved her fiercely. I resented her deeply. She was messy and imperfect, and she was my best friend, a huge part of the reason that I am who I am today. For most of my adult life, I focused on everything that I had lost by becoming her caretaker. The freedom, the entirety of my 20s, countless career opportunities that I passed up. It wasn't until recently, in a conversation with Vanessa, that I was finally invited to think about it differently. She asked me to think not about what I had sacrificed as a caretaker, but what I had gained. It ended up being a shockingly easy question to answer. I had gained more time with my mom, something I couldn't trade for anything in the world. I floundered after her passing. I had lost both a massive portion of my identity and my biggest source of unconditional love. I had no clue how or where to go about searching for it again. For a long time, I was looking in all of the wrong places and at all of the wrong people, barely even able to give myself the love I needed. It wasn't until I decided to attend my first UU service, almost completely on a whim, that I discovered where I was going to find it. And oh boy, did I find it. I found more love in this community than I could ever have anticipated, in every sense of the word. The unconditional support and kindness, the genuine caring I've witnessed here is nearly impossible to overstate, as is my gratitude. I've learned more about love in the past 6 months than in my entire 35 years on this earth, both what it means to love and how transformative a force that can be. What I've come to find is that for all of its complexities, for all of the hours upon hours that can be spent dissecting the very meaning of the word, and for all of the disagreement that there may be about the subject, love is actually very simple. It's there every single time we show up, even when getting out of bed feels like a monumental task. It's there in the conscious choice we're all making every day to build a beloved community here. It's in our fight for social justice, in our willingness to be vulnerable with each other, in the friends who help us move, and the animals we feed and care for, even when they pee outside of the litter box. It's in every song we sing, in every story we tell, and is the very spark of everything that we create. It's the gentle healing breeze that rustles through the redwoods on a sunny day. Love is there in all of its messiness, in all of its beautiful complexity, at the very center of everything there is. There's a famous quote by my personal hero and beloved minister, Fred Rogers, that helped to shape the way that I navigate the world. He said, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.' And I think that, with this in mind, the most important lesson that I've learned is that the same can be said of love. Even in times when it feels like blind, violent hatred has seeped its toxicity into every facet of this world, it's important to remember to look for the love, If you know where to look and what to look for, you'll always find love.
Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. I'm so glad they said yes and they were able to share their beauty of words and thoughts with you. Thank you again so much to our participants. I'll offer this discussion again, but online in the fall, so watch for signups at the beginning of September.